2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share their real life experiences and the tools they've learned and developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm producer Kellyanne, stepping in to guest host today.
And this is an exciting day because we are with a man who feels like a friend, Sid Smith, though we've never met in person. But Sid, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
All right. We are going to jump into this because you have, as so many people do, you have a unique story. I feel like yours might be ultra unique. And I'm going to jump in and let you kind of introduce yourself. But let me preface this really quickly. A couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity in my military position to travel down to Fort Sam Houston. It's in San Antonio, Texas. It is where the Army Medical Center of Excellence is, Brooke Army Medical Hospital, and what they call the Intrepid Center. And the Intrepid Center is very state-of-the-art physical therapy and prosthetic work for particularly military members who have lost a limb or more limbs. It was the quote that came from this was from the Mayo Brothers of Mayo Clinic fame, that the only victor in war is medicine. And of course, the idea is that out of terrible, awful tragedies of war, we've actually developed a lot of science and medicine that's then used in a civilian world. And Sid, I thought of you, and our listeners will soon learn why if they don't yet know. I was at this Intrepid Center, and we were learning all about prosthetics and the training and the technology, and they had a timeline of what prosthesis used to look like and what amputation used to look like, and then all the way up to what it is and what they plan for it to be. And there was this woman, a female military member, who had lost both of her feet and both of her hands, and maybe from about the ankle and the wrist down. And they were working with her to get her back to very independent functionality, to where she would be able to take care of her own needs, use hands that were not biologically her own. And it blew my mind because here I am, fairly able-bodied with 2 feet and 2 hands and 2 legs and 2 arms, and even sometimes I can't figure out what I'm doing. And yet the technology and the resilience of the person and people involved just knocked me off my feet. So Sid, with that, I want you to jump in and share a little bit about you and your story. And maybe you can start by introducing yourself and your Instagram handle and then explain the name and what it means.
That's a good start. Golly, yes, I do think that's awesome you had that experience. I mean, I am missing both my feet. But yeah, to miss your hands, that is tough. I get that question. This is, would you rather miss your hands or feet? And I much rather miss my
why
my
do people
feet
ask dumb questions like that?
I do a lot of public speaking to youth, and okay. I'll get every weird question out of the sun.
Like, I bet. We could do a whole episode on awkward questions you've gotten.
Oh yeah, no, it is true. Kids are awesome. But yeah, brief history about myself. My name is Sydney Smith, and my Instagram handle is try no feet. And it's kind of a little bit of a play on words because I like to do triathlons and I have no feet. So that's kind of where that all started. But I live here in Utah. I'm in the northeastern corner in Vernal, Utah. I have 4 kids, love sports. I like to hunt. I like to fish. I like to, like I said, do triathlons. I love the outdoors. And like I said earlier, I am missing my legs below my knee. And what that is where that started, is a disease called Charcot-Marie tooth. What that is it's a progressive genetic disorder. So it was a disease that I was born with that affected my hands and my feet. And, you know, I was born with a normal body, but it's progressive. So the older I got, the more deformities happen, and then surgeries to fix them. But eventually the deformities became too strong. And then when I turned 33 years old, is that battle became too much, and I ended up having both of them amputated.
Oh, wow. So that's interesting. Let's talk about that. Of course, this is a show on resilience, and we particularly use the word relentless with our resilience. So for the first 33 years of your life, you already had this disease. This wasn't a sudden act of war or a car accident or something that took your feet from you. Can you speak a little bit about what that was like as a child and a young man? What were these surgeries and treatments like? And maybe how did that help you build resilience? Or what were the difficulties maybe associated with that before you even lost them?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a kid, you know, at first you don't understand. And a lot of times kids can be accepting. When I was 12 is when I got diagnosed with the disease. And I was at an age that I obviously started realizing that I'm not the same as other kids. Like, I kept tripping a lot. I kept falling. And then when I started going to use crutches and had these cast boots on, and I definitely got teased, and it was hard as a kid just because you want to be like everybody else. You know, all my brothers, they played sports. My dad was a big athlete. It was just difficult. I couldn't be like everybody else. And that was probably the most difficult as a kid, because I just wanted to do the things I loved and be like everybody else. And then eventually I got these big braces, kind of like what Forrest Gump wore. And ironically, that's right when the movie came out.
Really?
Forrest Gump. And so, so I always got the, when I was running the playground, I always got run, Sydney, run. Yeah, exactly.
How did you handle that? Like, was it funny and good natured, or was that kind of more to that mean and it, kids not understanding that that could be hurtful?
At the time it was hurtful just because it just felt like I'm on a thin line as it is. Cause yeah. It's like everything's difficult. And the toughness was something that I just didn't have right out the get go.
Sure.
I look at it now and I laugh about it. In fact, it's, you know, people do it now and I think, yeah, I give them high fives for it because that's what I like to do.
I'm
now.
Sure they mean
ironic
it as a compliment.
I love
right.
To run.
Right. But yeah. as a child, you mentioned several things that stuck out to me. Children just want to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really knows what normal means, but we all wish we could just be normal, whatever that is. We wish we had the same hair color and the same skin color and the same kinds of bodies. And
we don't want to stand
out
in the wrong
anything different.
Way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Anything different can so often be negative, especially in some of those cruel years. Kids can be mean
mm-hmm.
with maybe without realizing the impact that those comments or those words can have. So, okay, you've got the braces. What age were that when you got the Forrest Gump style braces? Were you junior high-ish?
Yeah, 14-ish. So during junior high. And I just want to add, like, I look at it now, and I'm glad I had those because being teased or at least as a kid, because it has made me stronger, because it was just something that my parents have taught me. It's like, you know, they let them say what they want and you do you. And that's kind of where I just was more accepting of my situation. I was still a little embarrassed. Like,
sure.
I would wear pants and so that we can try to hide it the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I wear shorts all the time and it does not bother me. I get looks all the time. Especially kids, they're always pointing and say, Daddy,
kids,
what happened to his legs?
They
or
don't
why,
have so many
why
filters.
Why does he look like a robot? Yeah, they don't have a filter, no.
All right, so you're going through your young adult years. You have the amputations at age 33. Talk through that piece of the transition. A lot of times in resilience, we build resilience because of times of transition.
Mm-hmm.
Something happens maybe we hadn't planned on or hoped for or expected. And we kind of sink or swim, and we probably sink for a while and hope to learn to swim. So, and you literally swim, so no pun intended. But talk me through that immediate recovery period of going from a man with two legs and feet that at least to some degree carried your body around, though with difficulty,
sure.
to now you really don't have them. And I think most of us who have all of our limbs have no way of even imagining the difficulty of losing one, let alone more than one. Can you walk us through maybe both the mental and the physical resilience that you had to build immediately in that, hey, I am now an amputee?
Sure. Yeah, it came down to where I struggled with accepting my disease
mm-hmm.
at that in my late 30s, or excuse me, early 30s. And it was because the pressure was on, like, hey, you know, here I am, 30, 2:33, and I'm struggling to walk. Like, I can't get to the back of a Walmart without taking a break at the dressing room. I mean, that was my plan, because they had a place to sit.
Was that because of pain or because of the actual?
Yeah.
Okay.
The pain. So basically, like, my ankles became my heel, and the braces would just rub and cause all kinds of problems. And I would get bones that would break because the disease made everything so feeble. But I was so acquired by the pain so well that I just accepted that I had broken bones.
Oh, wow.
But mentally, I was stressing out, and then that's when major depression kicked in, because the pressure of being an adult male, I had two kids and one on the way at the time. I had a job. I was the breadwinner at the time, I was running a hotel. And then just like, I was looking at my life, like, holy, I'm still young, and I don't, you know, if this is the progress, like, what's it going to be like in the next 5 years? And then I started freaking out, like, holy, I'm never going to do the things I want to do. My kids are not going to have the father they wanted to play with, because now I'm just going downhill. You know, that was really, really rough. And so I just thought, there's something that needs to happen. Something needs to change, something dramatic. And so when I went to the doctor and he looked at my feet, he goes, holy, yeah, we do need to amputate your legs. We're going to do one at a time. And it was my choice to do one at a time instead of both, just because it was easier for me to get to work in crutches versus a wheelchair. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. So after the first amputation, it was very painful, and it was a struggle. And I didn't understand what that pain was like. I had a lot of phantom pain, but I also got really, really sick and fevery and so forth. And
like infection?
What I was experiencing.
Or...
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly what it was. My stomach got infected, and I didn't take care of it. Mm-hmm. And so when it got to the bone in my stomach, the doctors is like, oh, shoot, you should have got here earlier, because we could have beat it. But since it's eaten a lot of your bone, we need to amputate even higher.
No.
And so at that point is when I hit when I thought was rock bottom, I even went down deeper. And that's when the suicidal thoughts came in, and was trying to plan it out, because mentally I was like, oh, yeah, I feel like I'm a burden to so many people, especially my wife, you know, who's didn't sign up to be a caretaker, and now she's got to deal with that. And then, you know, I just at the time mentally, I mean, I look at it now how silly that thought process was, but at the time mentally, I was like, you know, I feel like I would be a lot easier for humanity and my family and my friends all around me if I just wasn't around, because I'm just causing so many problems. And so that's when I hit it.
So talk us through that. You're still here. Those feelings of major depression and suicide ideation are not easily defeated or worked through. Unfortunately, all of us know someone who's gotten to that point and is no longer still here with us alive. Walk us through that darkness, that depth of you're as low as you can go, and then you go even lower. How are you still here? How did you get out of that or through that?
That's a good question. It was a day I was coming home from a doctor's appointment, and I was just thinking in my mind, you know, how big of a pain this is all happening from this amputation. And I was like, was praying kind of that something, I couldn't kill myself, but I was hoping like a truck would hit me or something like that. And I just had this awful attitude. And then I came home and I was in the kitchen, and my little baby, McKenna, who's one of my daughters, and she was learning how to walk. And it was kind of funny because we both were learning how to walk at the same time. And that sound of that pitter-patter of a baby walking is something that only, you know, a parent can understand, the appreciation of that joy. And I started thinking about that sound, and every time I had these negative thoughts, I kept hearing that pitter-patter in my head. And then I felt the spirit at the time was telling me, you know, yes, you were giving, you know, a life that was difficult, you know, a life that's hard, you know, so to speak, you know, a bad set of cards. But that pitter-patter sound of my daughter and my rest of my kids, like, they don't need to experience a life where they have to deal with, you know, their father that had committed suicide. So I didn't feel like it was fair to them. And so that's when the perspective changed dramatically. Like, this is not about me. This is about them. And I need to provide the best experience I can to make them happy, because my kids love me. Like, that, they didn't really care. Like, we talked about how accepting they are. They didn't care about my situation. They loved me because I was their dad. And so I just put my head down and told those demons to be quiet and put it in the rearview mirror. And I told the doctors, they said, let's go ahead and amputate higher. And while you're at it, let's kill two birds with one stone and amputate the other leg, because it's going to happen anyways. Mm-hmm. So wow. In November of 2015 is when we made that decision. And it was a good one. Like, it was hard, obviously. You know, I look at it as very difficult physically, mentally, you know, waking up from surgery, looking under the sheets. And even though I had, you know, some mangled legs, they were still my legs. And now that they're missing, it was difficult. You know, I knew that feeling of the cold grass or the sand on between your toes is gone, you know, on this life.
Wow.
So that was difficult. But because of that experience, I was hitting a reset button, and it actually hit me right there in the hospital, where I was one day watching television in the hospital, and on TV was the Ironman, which was this big triathlon race. And I've never ran even a 5K.
Wow.
And I just, for some reason, just like, golly, that's awesome. That's inspiring. And I thought, oh, how awesome would it be if that was something I could do? And so I was telling people that I'm going to do the Ironman, and people laughed, you know, when they came to visit me in the hospital, and they kind of chuckled, I could tell. And I think one of them, somebody said, hey, you know, what kind of pain meds are you on, buddy? Because that's crazy talk. Oh. But that was my motivation, and I made that as a goal to get out of the hospital, get better, you know, make sure everything's good, no infections. Learn how to swim without legs, learn how to bike, and then eventually learn how to walk and run.
Okay, wow. We're going to take a quick break for a minute and come back. I love the paradigm shift you had. I love that you called it a reset button. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this new chance at life that you almost in a way gave yourself. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, Sid, right before the break, when you said something, as you saw that Ironman competition on TV and you thought, wow, how awesome would that be if that was something I could do? And that spark of hope, that spark of possibility seems to have been kind of a turning point for you. There's a counselor I met with shortly after my husband died who gave a definition of hope. And he said that hope is simply the ability to look forward to something. Just to think that there could be something good ahead. It's just even a possibility of good. And so here you are. I'm surprised to hear you weren't the runner before, though I guess with the disabled legs, that probably would have made it difficult. Because sometimes you'll see like super athletes mm-hmm. who end up being amputees go back to being super athletes. But you went into being a super athlete because you saw it on TV. Like, this is awesome. This is the American dream. Tell us So now you've you're kind of in the mindset, all right, doc, take both of them. Let's get this done. Let's maybe take it head on rather than in that dark state. I'm very impressed and just grateful beyond words that you could shift your perspective from thinking your children would be better off without you to recognizing they would then live the rest of their lives having lost you. Mm-hmm. That is something a lot of people in a dark, depressive state don't see. Sid, my father, took his own life when I was 10. And I can tell you, I don't blame him. I don't fault him. I'm not angry with him. I know he thought he was doing what was best for us. And he was incredibly wrong. Incredibly wrong. And I'm grateful that you had that moment and could act on that moment. A lot of people can't. And so that's wonderful. Now you've got no feet. Try no feet. You've zero feet.
Again with your infant.
And now you're gonna swim. Now you're going to bike. Are you using prosthetics in the water and on the bike? And then, of course, you've got to have prosthetics to walk and run. Walk us through rehab. As Kellyanne said, you're relearning to walk as your cute little baby is walking.
Yeah.
Walk us through that. What's it like to be a grown man, husband, father, outdoorsman who now has no feet and yet has a dream to run a triathlon or compete in a triathlon?
No, that was the drive, was to do a triathlon. And I had to start from the basics. You know, the goal was the Ironman, which is the ultimate of all triathlons. So there's lots of little triathlons, but the Ironman is the big one. It's 140.6 miles.
Oh, wow.
I had to swim 2.4 miles. I had to bike 112, and then I had to do the run in 26.2 miles, all under 17 hours to be qualified or
wait a sec. I'm a numbers person. I'm writing this down. I'm like, whoa, did you just say what I think you said? I know the Ironman's awesome, but I don't know much more than that because I'm not a runner, swimmer, or biker. It's a full marathon.
Yep.
A 2.5 mile swim.
Uh-huh.
An over 100 mile bike ride. And you have to do it all in the same day, like in succession.
Yep. Within 17 hours.
There's not time for a nap in there. Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had to catch the gravity of the goal.
Oh.
I mean, talk about reach for the stars, buddy. Okay, so that's maybe not your first race coming out of amputation.
No.
All right,
no,
keep going. Keep going.
No, it wasn't my first. And really just started from the basics. Like, I'm a firm believer that we have to set big goals, even the goals like the Ironman that honestly scared me to think about. But I put my focus on what is the first step into getting to that. And I think a lot of people get overwhelmed with some of the big goals. And that's important. You've got to have that in the back of your mind to stay resilient. But let's focus on some of the things we can do. And that's where it was. Like everything every day was a step forward to that. So even learning how to walk and the pain that took from adjusting from a prosthetic that hurts to finally getting the right fit. And then moving into riding a bike, how to balance, how to clip in, and then how to swim. You know, I'm so used to kicking in the water, and now I have to use all my upper body. And it was about 6 months after amputation, I pushed it to the limits. The doctors even suggested to give it more time, but I was just so motivated that I did my first 5K in prosthetics, and it hurt. Like, I threw up. I couldn't sleep the night before, even though it was a 5K. I didn't know what it was like. And so I did 2 Red Bulls during the race because I thought I could get the energy. Boy, is that a mistake?
Lesson learned.
Oh, yeah.
Did you use running blades?
Finish line. Nope. I had walking feet. I didn't. Insurance doesn't cover running blades. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. But
yeah.
No, just walking feet. And, you know, it took me a while, but I did it. I wasn't the last one. And I was happy that I finished
and
it.
And you did
it. My family cheer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was a good feeling. Like, I look at it now and it's like a 5K is just like not even a workout. But
and yet
time,
it's more it miles like than big, I run big. Every day. So go ahead and downplay it.
No, it's everyone's race is their race. Like if it's their first 5K, that's a huge accomplishment because it's something that you work for and you're achieving your goals. That's what's important. Yes, an Ironman is cool, but for some people that 5K could be their Ironman. And for me,
appreciate you recognizing that we don't have to compete in the same race to be to accomplish our own finish line, because I'm not ever making it to 26.2 and I don't even feel bad about it.
That's okay. I run into people that way and I tell them, you know, you're right, but I do want you to know, if you want to, you can.
Sure.
If you want to bad enough, you definitely can.
I'll jump in on that with childbirth. I've never run a marathon, but I've given birth 7 times and I've had some with epidurals and some natural. And I will say the same thing to any expectant mother. If they talk about they don't want to have an epidural, I'll say that is absolutely fine. It's 100% doable. It is simply a choice. If you choose that, we will get you there. And if you don't choose that, that's okay too. That, you know, because there sometimes becomes kind of that, we put some of those cultural expectations on ourselves where we have to do this or have to do that. Well, no, we don't. We really don't, I promise you. If you choose to, if you choose to run and swim and bike, then all the rest of us will watch in awe. But I'm probably not joining you in the Ironman.
No, it's all right.
All right, so tell us, I ask this? And maybe this is a question that would be more fair of your wife if she were willing to answer. But you've mentioned your children and the impact that being a father has had on both the difficulty and kind of the reset and then, you know, the motivation. You mentioned your family's there for you at the finish line of that first 5K. Can you mention even briefly, like, what is the resilience in a relationship, particularly a marital or personal relationship like that, when you have such difficulties of both physical and psychological proportion? Can you speak to that if you're comfortable?
No, absolutely. And I'll try to hold my emotions back because it's not something that people ask me about, because they just look at me and it's like, oh, Sid did this and he did that. But what they don't see is there is an unsung hero in all this, and that is my wife, is because her emotional support was huge. Her being there, not knowing, just like me, the fear of what life is going to be like. You know, is she thinking, oh my goodness, I got to take care of him and, you know, maybe be the guy, the person that has to bring home the bacon and take care of my kids. And, you know, what's it going to be like? So she was going through some struggles too. But she was better actually at keeping her faith strong and listening to the Spirit and the Lord that everything was going to be okay, better than I did. And so she was there to help me. And honestly, there's so many things I look at now that I wouldn't have accomplished without her support and, you know, being there for me and also taking care of things at home. Like, that is so important. She's just as deserving of all my accomplishments as some of the things I did, if not more, because she is a great, great woman and she never complained. That's what I look at now. It's
remarkable.
Like, she never complained about my situation, and she's an, you know, amazing woman. And not everyone has, you know, like I talk to a lot of amputees, and sometimes marriages fall apart because sometimes people can't handle that, whether it be an attractive issue or they're like, Ollie, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it took work on my part too, to try to alleviate as much work for her as possible and try to, you know, I'm a very independent person. I'm stubborn about it sometimes. I get that from my parents, is that I will do the best I can on my end and I won't ask for help sometimes just because I don't want to be that burden. I don't know if it's a man thing. It may be, it may not be, but
I think it's an American thing for sure. We are so independent minded that we sometimes mistakenly think that means isolated. But you can be very independent and still have wonderful people adding to your life and your support.
Yeah.
Well, and just the way that you're speaking, you sound very communicative and open about your own expectations for yourself. I bet that was a trait that helped you through this process, being able to communicate with your wife.
Yeah.
And I bet she's a rock star.
She's probably a rock star. she doesn't like to be recognized.
Sure.
And if she listens to this podcast, which I'm sure she'll probably
be embarrassed.
Punch me in the shoulder.
Well, yeah. Mrs. Smith, I don't know you, but I admire you and I appreciate, at least in my imagination, I can imagine the rock that you've been and helped provided. Sid, I appreciate that you recognize that. Having been married myself to not an amputee, but a soldier. You know, you mentioned not all marriages make it through the process of amputation and rehabilitation. Not all marriages make it through deployments. And I can very confidently and proudly yet humbly say it took both of us. It took both of us.
Awesome.
And so I'm sure that's the case with you and your sweet wife, that neither one of you could have done it alone, and yet look what you're capable of doing together. And I just want to point out the beautiful resilience that can be found in relationships. Like you said, not everyone has those relationships, and not every relationship is created equal. But when we invest time and effort and value into our relationships, look what a return they can provide to us in those times of difficulty. And what a, you know, you speak about tools of resilience. I think sometimes it's not what our tools are, but who our tools are. So mm-hmm. I would like to meet your sweet wife one day, because she sounds pretty amazing.
Oh, she is. She definitely is. Like, she's my favorite. Best friend.
Oh, good.
Too.
Oh, that's cute. So. All right. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to jump into, well, now what? You made it from the first fight through the first 5K. It's been several years now. I follow you on Instagram, and I know you are not just working on the second 5K. So we'll be right back and jump into what you're doing in your own life, in your family life, and particularly in the kind of charitable world where you're giving back. We'll be right back. All right, Sid, how do you go from 5K number one to whatever? I don't even know what you're doing now. How many Ironmans? How many different competitions? I would imagine you maybe now have some running feet. Do you want to talk about that for a second? You have mentioned the...
Sure.
Let's talk finances. Let's talk about how expensive it is to be disabled or have a disease, to have surgery, to have amputation. When, like I said, I was at the Army Center, the Intrepid Center, and they had state-of-the-art prosthesis, and I asked, mm-hmm. you know, how many prosthetic limbs might an amputee have in their lifetime? And they said it would literally be dozens. Mm-hmm. I was shocked by mm-hmm. that, because the stump morphs and changes, and the one wears out, or it just doesn't fit right anymore. Or maybe you do need a running versus a swimming versus a biking versus a I'm a dad playing.
The different way you use your body, it changes your gait. I'm a body worker, and that's one thing you see as well.
So let's talk about the process of that, and then let's talk about the price of that, because that can't be. Especially if you're the primary breadwinner, you have a young family when all of this is starting to happen. Like, this is a very expensive, difficult trial.
Yeah, it is true. That's the biggest pain in the butt is the cost of being an amputee. But, you know, same with the paraplegic. They go through the same thing with trying to get quality wheelchairs or quadriplegics as well. But for me, yes, they don't cover prosthetics that are for running. They look at that as a luxury for most companies. And so I did have the basics. And so basically, for youth, it is a lot more because your limb is changing. But that's exactly what happens. The limb changes. As an adult, I get a new set. My insurance will cover every 2 years. And that maxes out my insurance. And if I were to pay it out front, the pair of legs I wear now are about $15,000 a piece.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Okay.
And then running ones are going to be about $20,000 a piece.
Oh my goodness.
Just with the markup of insurance.
Yeah.
And the medical, you know, medical equipment. And then there's also maintenance throughout. So I pay for liners and sleeves and the pieces that are wear out quick, and socks mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. And of course, because it's medical equipment, it's super expensive. But the running was actually, Blades was a charity called Amputee Blade Runners out of Nashville, and they heard my story, and I got selected as one of their athletes, where I was sponsored a pair of running blades. And when I was given those, that's when I started really getting into running longer distances. So I did my first half marathon, and then I worked my way to the half Ironman, which is a difficult race. And I did a few of those. Basically, it's half the Ironman, so 70.3 miles. And then in 2018, I decided to sign up for the 2019 Ironman in Florida. And I wanted to take a whole year of dedication. I got a coach and everything to do that race. And so that was the one, and still is the only Ironman that I have signed up for, because it took a little year of my life of training every day. and some weeks are anywhere from 20 to 30 hours a week of just training, and that's, you know, including my regular job and so forth.
Well, and you're also doing physical therapy and probably occupational therapy as well, correct? Or
well, not so much now, because I'm now, I guess, seasoned. I could go throughout most of my day, you know, without wearing my leg. But in the beginning, definitely occupational therapy and physical therapy. But at this point, you know, no, I'm pretty much living a normal life that
I
always wanted.
Yeah.
No, I was hunting and playing with my kids. Like, it was, life is great, you know, because I thought was now over. It's now, I'm doing all the things that I wanted to do. The fear is now turned into a strong faith. And I had purpose. I've had failures that I've overcome. And then, and also that's when gratitude of my situation started to kick in.
Wow. That's impressive and inspiring. What does it feel like on the emotional side to run one of these races or compete in, I guess, run, swim, walk, whatever, or bike? Can you walk through the process of, like, competition day in your headspace?
Sure.
and what that looks like? Not so much the physical. Well, maybe the physical too, both. Walk me through both.
Yeah. Well, so for me, the race itself was the pinnacle because it was the one, you know, I just kept looking back at the goal that I was setting. But leading up to it, like even flying out there, swimming in the ocean, getting everything set up, meeting all these people, like that was just kind of through the motion. It really didn't hit me what was I about to do until they started singing the national anthem, which is the best song in the world. And once they started singing, the tears started flowing, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is here. And I'm so, you know, it's just an emotional song no matter what. You know, the way it hits the soul. And so I just was so pumped to have that happen. And that's where my emotions, I was just trying to hold back. And I just started this focus, and I did the swim at record time. It was an amazing experience. I had no problems there other than I saw a stingray and I kind of peed in my wet suit a little bit. A little nervous. the bike was amazing. It was 112 miles. You know, I trained heavily on the bike because I knew my run was going to be the most difficult. But at the same time, I had a benefit over others because I was training at 7,000 feet elevation. Mm-hmm. And down there, the ocean sea level, I felt like Superman in my lungs. And so I rocked through that.
A little better oxygen absorption.
Yep.
Wow.
But the last few miles of the bike was when stress started to kick in because I knew I had to do a whole marathon. I gave myself plenty of time to do it, but I still knew it was going to be difficult. And with running prosthetics, that's the most impact you can give on your stump. And so a lot of things could go
pounding
wrong.
Every single step.
Well, and is your amputation just below the knee? Because that also... Yep. Okay.
One's a little higher because I had to cut up higher, but both of them are right. One's right below the knee and one's a little longer.
Okay.
But yeah, the run was beautiful. Like, you're running near the ocean. It starts to get dark, so you get you don't see people as much because it's in the dark because it's getting later. I started throwing up because the food wasn't coming through. I got a hold of some chicken broth on the race. Someone was giving out chicken broth, and that helped.
Okay.
And then everything was good until about mile 133. And that was kind of a really life-changing moment for me. At mile 133, which is about 7 miles left in the race, I hit a wall. A lot of the adrenaline that I was pumping through my veins was starting to wear off. My stump was filling up with fluid, and it was hurting so bad. I'd take it off just to let the blood rush because my knees were going numb. And I had all these blisters and blood coming out, and I was worried that if I don't put my prosthetic back on, it will swell up, but I couldn't get it back on. So I hurried, put it back on, and I kept walking, and I had to stop and walk and stop. And I started looking at my mileage, and it was taking me almost 45 minutes to cover a whole mile.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I was adding it up, and I was like, I'm not going to finish the race in under 17 hours.
Yeah.
So I was so worried. And so I just started thinking, you know, how can I get through this pain? And I just try to think of some happy thoughts and things that I love in my life. And the first thing that came into my mind is what I think is the most powerful feeling that we can have as human beings, besides love, and that is gratitude. So I just started thinking of the things that I'm grateful for, like obviously my wife and kids. That's where I go to first, because I am one lucky son of a gun. I have beautiful kids. I have a smoking hot wife that loves me and supports me. And I started thinking of my job. I started thinking of, you know, my employer is able to, you know, have patience with me in this whole scenario and allows me to come out and do this. Thinking of my friends and the contacts that I've made that have got me through all this. Then I started thinking of my physical abilities, like, you know, I don't have my legs, but I still have my hands, and then I still have my eyesight, and I still can breathe, and, you know, I'm here in Florida. Heck, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my legs. Mm-hmm. But my whole life, I always hated my situation. I kind of deep down blamed God for this and thought that I was being, you know, punished in the situation. And, mm-hmm. and trials will do that to you. Every one of us, we think that life's not fair, and that's what happens to us. We're just, life sucks. And mm-hmm. so I even at all these amazing things up to that point, still deep down in my soul, I felt a little resentment. But at this point, I started thinking clearly, like, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my legs. I wouldn't have the patience that I have now with my spouse and life, and it's made me a better husband and a better employee. It's made me stronger as an individual. It's actually brought me closer to God. And that's when it clicked that this is not a curse. This is a blessing. And during all these thought process of gratitude and thinking how grateful I am of my trials and my things that I have in my life, I was running and I wasn't stopping. And
wow.
Like a pain subsided, I got through it and I finished the race with 30 minutes left.
Woohoo!
I love it.
Oh my gosh. Man, you could just write books and thesis papers about what you just said of the power of positive thinking over the physical body, not just over the mental, but that you went from walking at a very painful, slow pace to pretty soon your body's physically able to pick up that run and finish. Well, we're proud of you. Like, I'm clapping for you as if I'm at the finish line. Like, yes, go Sid.
And I love that, you know, you've been looking at this as a curse, but it was a blessing.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have been
turning
there
point
if it wasn't for that. Like, how powerful is that statement right there?
Yeah, today, even, you know, this has been a few years since that race, I still feel the same way, and I can't deny it. Like, I would never give up any trials, being teased as a kid, nothing. I would never give any of that up, just because it's really the path to salvation. It's the pathway to happiness. It's how you appreciate those things and really realize the important things in life. You find happiness within yourself. You know, sometimes we do have great things that happen to us, but sometimes they don't. And honestly, the happiest people I've met are not the ones that are rich and successful and have all this money. The happiest people I've met are the people that have found that magic.
Wow. That's incredible. And so true. And honestly, that I think that could be resilience in a nutshell, is being able to let yourself appreciate the difficult. And I really appreciate that you said you wouldn't trade it. You wouldn't trade the teasing. You wouldn't trade, which most people would say, well, of course, I'm sure you would trade it, give anything to have, you know, this or that back, or this or that not happen, or avoid this or that difficult thing. And yet I think in true resilience, that, as you called it, true happiness and our personal human quest for salvation of our souls and our ourselves comes in a certain level of acceptance, mm-hmm. that this is my path. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the path I picked or predicted, but this is my path. And if I'm being really honest and looking backward at that path, I have to admit that many of those difficult things have actually made me who I am and qualified me to be where I am 100%. On the path today. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful. Mm-hmm.
Can I, the dreams in motion.
Yes. Okay. We've got a few minutes left. Can you, and I think we're going to do a follow-up visit with you and some of the other Dreams in Motion partners. But before we wrap up today, we're incredibly inspired by your personal resilience and your family's resilience and this physical and mental tenacity that you've discovered and developed. Let's talk for just these last few minutes about Dreams in Motion, what it is, what you do, and what draws you to be a part of that in basically giving back and trying to help others who might be facing difficulties that might be similar to what you faced.
I feel blessed as an individual. Like, I've had a lot of people do nice things for me and given me opportunities. And I think what Dreams in Motion, why I want to be a part of it, is I kind of want to do the same for others. It's a program where we provide experiences for people that are going through some serious physical struggles or whatnot, and we kind of give them an experience that's a dream of theirs. I don't want to get into too much details because I know I'll talk about it. But,
yeah, we'll have some more time.
Yeah, well, basically, we've had some neat individuals that want to go to a sporting event or a Broncos game that's struggling with cancer, and we provide that experience for them. And just to see them light up, that moment, really makes me forget about, I got, my own set of problems. Like, it's not about me. It's about that experience. And it just changes your mindset. When you're doing service for others is when you really lose yourself. And not, have to worry about some of the problems you have in your own life.
So is it a bit like, most of our listeners are probably familiar with the Make-A-Wish Foundation for children who have terminal illness, and then they get to go to Disneyland or ride in the Corvette or whatever wish they have. Sounds like maybe you're providing a similar experience, dreams, but the motion part, I know you do a lot with athletics and sports and kind of that movement side. So that sounds impressive.
You nailed it on the head, correct,
Okay, so we are looking forward to future conversation with you and Bruce and Wes and just kind of that ongoing Dreams in Motion team.
Could we get the website
of
that? So where do we find information about Dreams in Motion for those who want to learn more about it or even donate to the cause?
DreamsInMotionCharity.com, all one word.
Fantastic. Okay. And I'm sure they have links to socials and everything as well. Fantastic.
And you're try_nofeet on Instagram, right? Okay. All right. Well, you've kind of made me feel lazy, so thanks for that. I might go home and see if I can sign up for a 5K. All right. We appreciate, but for sure not the Ironman or the full marathon, but maybe a 5K. All right. Well, thank you, Sid, for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your story and resilience defined and personified in you and those two feetless legs you've got moving you and running you and swimming you. So we look forward to learning more about Dreams in Motion next time. To all of our listeners, thank you for joining us today. I don't know how you would not be inspired by this story, but we hope you have been. We hope you'll find us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a like, a rating, and a review. And what we really hope is that you'll maybe take a deep look inside and find that story you're willing to share. You've been through something, overcome something, learned something, and we would love to have you share with us your story, your journey, and your tools of resilience that can help the rest of us keep continuing to live our best lives. You can contact us through email at rrpodcast@ksl.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast. And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Take care, everybody.
Have a great day.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.